Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of In The Zone podcast. My name is Stacey Owino, and I will be your host for this episode. I am joined with...
Hi, I'm Hilary. I'm a software developer at Zanzibar One Kisumu and also an AI enthusiast. When I'm not at work, I enjoy TV and movies. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Moses Otieno, also a software developer at Zanzibar One Kisumu, learning to code, and I'm also an AI enthusiast.
So yeah, that's an interesting introduction. And I think, Hilary, you've brought us to what we're discussing today, which is AI. So I'll just start very lightly and nicely. How did you end up in this space today where you can say you're an AI enthusiast?
Okay, so in my work, I do a lot of coding. When ChatGPT came along, it was a very disruptive technology in the tech world. So I tried using it for coding. And since then, I've been very interested in other things that AI can do beyond text generation, including robotics and other stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Also, in my work, we also do a lot of hackathons and things like that, and we get to use AI to do amazing and cool stuff. Yeah.
For me, when I joined Zone01, it was a chance to learn programming, and AI has been a great help at learning, because you find a lot of resources faster with it. It summarizes a lot of information instead of the traditional way of learning, where people used to go to Stack Overflow, look for documentation and stuff, and AI kind of like brought all this information in one place and helped me know the direction that I'm going to, and you can get an entire guideline from it, the way it summarizes the information. And it's been a great help for the learning experience. And that's how I ended up here.
Interesting conversation that we're having here. Maybe just for people who don't fully understand, what is this artificial intelligence, Moses, in your own words?
In my own words, I wouldn't fully describe it as intelligence. But the best term to use it is like a large language model, where it's a model trained on a lot of data that knows responses to a lot of data. It predicts the next information that it's going to get. So basically, that's what the AI it is, but it's not as intelligent as such, because it doesn't think creatively, doesn't make these decisions. All it does is predict the next word that it's going to put in its output.
That's an interesting point of view. What about your point of view?
In my own words, I'd say that AI is basically just the computer trying to mimic human intelligence. It is not yet there, but it's trying anyways. And like ChatGPT, the LLMs, that's just one type of AI. There are other kinds of AI, including image generation, video generation, and other things like machine learning. Yeah. So AI is not just about predicting text, but it's a bigger field with other things also involved. But the one that I use most are the large language models like ChatGPT. Yeah.
So now, from the conversation that you're having currently, are you able to say, for example, that AI is actually good for us in our today's world?
Of course.
In what sense?
Yeah. I would say that in my workflow, it makes iteration quicker. Yeah. So you can think of ideas, ask it questions, get answers. Immediately, you can use it to study, to help you summarize a lot of information. You can also just chat with it and do ideations and brainstorming and things like that. So, and also other applications, like in real world, is very useful. It can help you to do your job. Yeah, a lot of stuff.
From what you're saying, I have a feeling we're going to get to the point of, will AI take my job?
Yeah.
Which is a conversation we're going to have just in a bit. But maybe for you, Moses, are there things that you think maybe we shouldn't trust AI with?
AI, as most of these, like, let's say, large language models, they tend to use the user input as a training data. So you find a lot of what you tell it, they will go back and use it to train their model so that the next time the response will be better. And you feel like they are, though the big tech companies, the ones that run AI, they say they don't train on personal data, but you never know, you know. But AI has been like of great help to people. People are using it for therapy, people are using it for their daily lives, recipes and stuff. And most of the time I just use it for programming. And as a programmer, I'd say, while you're learning, minimize the use of AI. Don't overdo it, or don't be inclined to the vibes coding mentality. Yeah, over-reliant to the AI. At some point you have to know these things, but it gives us a central place of information that has almost everything you might want, and over-reliance might be the problem.
So I really want us to dwell on one of the aspects that you've talked about, where we're using data to train this AI. And I think we were having a very interesting conversation before the camera was rolling on the ethical and biasness of AI. I think I would really love to hear your inputs on this.
Of course, the companies that run these AI models, they will have to run with some social norms. You don't want just to, because most of the training data they get is from internet, Reddit, all over. And you don't want these large language models to just say anything that people have been saying on the internet. And it might start suggesting, what's the word? It might start suggesting socially unacceptable vices, you know. And so for these training data, they have to limit it to how they think. And you'll find the AI will always be biased to their kind of thinking. Like last year, we had an issue with Gemini, where it was producing black, the images were producing black presidents of America, black versions of everyone. You'd ask it to generate an image of, say, Abraham Lincoln, and it generated a black Abraham Lincoln. And a question was being raised, why is AI woke, you know? And you find it, they are structuring it to their way of thinking, to their line of thinking. So in the current world, you can't just trust AI fully with the entire information. Yeah.
That's an interesting point of view. Shouldn't AI be woke?
Oh, okay.
Should it be woke? Like, do you want it to be biased and racist and all these isms that you see?
The CEO of OpenAI is said he's working on an AI model that gives everyone a response that is structured to their way of thinking, you know. Because everyone is coming from different cultural backgrounds, and you know, everyone's way of thinking is different. And they were trying to work on a new model that can be trained to give you the data. Your information that it gives you will not be the same as somebody else's information. And we can already see this in other platforms, like let's say, for example, Instagram. Your Instagram feed will never be the same as somebody's Instagram feed, the same with TikTok. They are trained and to be curated to be like for you specifically. Now that's where they want AI to go, because there are people who are anti-woke, there are people who are woke, and for that you want the AI to be, you want it to be inclusive to everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think we'll get back to you in a bit. And I really want us to explore further the aspect of how AI and algorithm is being used to tailor the conversation to our needs. Because I know right now ChatGPT has the memory function, in which right now my ChatGPT is very much to what I want it to give me. And right now if I ask it about coding, it usually gives me response in either Go or Ruby, things that I work with. So really, maybe for you, what is your outlook on the conversation you're having with Moses right now?
I think it's important when we're using the technologies to also be aware of the biases that might be there in the training. Because at the end of the day, you can't police what other people are doing.
Yeah.
And the large language models are trained on data generated by people, real people with opinions and everything. So if you try and make AI work or not make it work or do all that stuff, you might end up with inaccurate predictions from the model. So I think it's more for the users to kind of moderate how they use the data generated by the large language models. Yeah. Also, in terms of the training data and the testing of the models, the developers that are building them, I think they should also, after building the model, they should test it thoroughly and check it against bias, such as I heard there were AI that could not, for example, recognize black faces, or they were unable to generate black faces accurately and things like that. That to me feels like a lack of testing.
Yeah. All right. Okay. We'll kind of get back. I know there's the whole idea of also the working conditions of people who are training this data and everything. I'm not sure that's a conversation we'll have today, but this for sure we need to repeat. Mm-hmm. I'm very much interested in your experiences working with AI. So say, for example, how is it transforming your software engineering and coding development space?
Like I said earlier, I use it a lot during the, not over-reliant though. I use it a lot during coding, because sometimes you meet a task and you don't know like where to start. But the thing is, most people have met that task before, and they documented it, will put their code on GitHub or whatever, Stack Overflow, and you get this AI, got training data from those platforms. So you have like a centralized place with all information, and you can start something from scratch. And for example, if you're learning a new language, you can get a lot of resources at once. And recently they have brought their thinking models, thinking inputs, mm-hmm. and they also have a search feature. So you find these come a lot in handy, even if their training that is backdated to, I don't know, maybe 2024 or something, and you need something very recent, like now, you can implement the search feature and it can summarize for you a documentation that just came out a few days ago and something like that. So it's been a great help during coding, and it helps learning very fast. Something you could have learned in 2 weeks, you are learning it in a few days. Yeah.
Interesting. And I think for you now, I'll ask you the age-old question. Will AI replace software developers?
For now, no. No. Yeah, but for now.
Okay.
Yeah. The question lies on when artificial general intelligence will become a reality.
Yes.
And it's not yet a reality as far as we know right now. So I don't think for now it will replace us. Yeah. So I personally am not worried because I think it will also create other jobs because we'll need to integrate the artificial intelligence beyond just text generation or use in software to other industries like construction or agriculture, health. And those are jobs. We'll need people who will do the integration and build the tools mm-hmm. that leverage AI to improve efficiency and also open up new opportunities that we have not yet thought of.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'm not worried personally.
I think to add on that,
as we say, AI is very efficient, and while coding, you can see like a task that will require a lot of people to do, you find one person can do it. Now that's where the problem comes. Why employ 1,000 people to do a certain task while 100 people can do it with AI? So basically it won't replace software engineers, but the best ones are the ones that are going to remain in the field, the ones that will be using AI. I don't know who said that, but it was the people who don't use AI are the ones who are going to be replaced, because you find it's very efficient, it's very fast, and it's you find a task that can take someone months, you can do it within weeks, you know. And as of now, it cannot do the coding on its own. It needs a guidance and someone who knows what it's doing. So that's where you find a lot of big tech companies over the last 2 years, 2023 and 2024, they've been downscaling. There've been a lot of layoffs over the years. And what they realized is, with the help of AI, you find we have thousands of software developers working on one thing, while sometimes you only need tens of developers with AI. So that's where the problem comes, and it has affected most industries. We've seen the writing, people who do the technical writings or the articles writing, they've reduced over the years, because now you find a lot of people who are working on the articles and the assignments or something. A lot of people, they were really putting in the work, and you could find someone doing a job within a day, or within, say, 2 days, 3 days. But now AI comes, you can do it within hours. How many jobs can you do with that AI during the day? You know, that's where the problem comes, and a lot of people won't get the opportunities if you don't use AI.
I don't know. For me, yeah, go ahead.
I think since most of the early adopters and the creators of AI are software engineers and AI researchers, the tools they tend to build first are tools to try and replace software developers or parts of their work.
I think automation.
Yeah. So I think when AI automation comes here, we are likely to be the first ones to be replaced, because most of the tools being built right now are tools to generate code, build software, and do all manner of stuff. There are tools in other industries like writing, but that was obvious because of the large language models. But for the other more technical industries, I think it'll take a while before that's a reality, because it's also expensive. And also on the part of the big companies laying off developers and everything, I don't think they were laying them off because they're being replaced by AI. I think it's more of the companies who are redirecting their resources to invest in AI. So they didn't have a lot of resources to hire new talent.
That's an interesting conversation around business and AI. For me, I think there's a small sweet spot where it's a balance of you might be replaced and you might not be replaced, because it's from this conversation that you've just had that you've told me it's not as smart. We are the intelligence, and we're trying to teach AI how to be smart and almost mimic the way we do our work. Say, for example, I don't think I would be very comfortable knowing that AI is the final decision maker of whether a missile will be launched in Nairobi or not. I don't know what you think of that, but that's just about me. That's just with me. Moving on to like the business of AI. I mean, that's the conversation that you are having. So really, what industries in Africa have you seen that AI is really taking it by a storm, and they're somewhat, what's the word? They're thriving in that space.
Businesses in Africa that are using AI, I wouldn't say.
Or even fields. Mm-hmm. Maybe businesses, it's somewhat limiting our conversation, but fields.
I wouldn't say no of many as such. But of course, in my field, it's basically it's a very helpful tool, and it helps a lot. I think a lot of people use AI for their daily lives, like CV writing and all that stuff. And for the business perspective, I wouldn't say I know of any that like work. But maybe Hillary can guide us there.
I think in the business world, I think especially in healthcare, I think it's being used there. Because for some narrow cases, AI can identify patterns which will take us maybe months to analyze all the data. So a lot of analytics in healthcare, and also just business analytics in general, and also a lot of content is being created by AI, especially in communications and PR and marketing and such. Yeah.
How best do you think AI can help us with our issue of food security currently?
I think in terms of food security, I think it's a complex issue because I think there are even startups that are trying to work on AI in the agricultural sector. For example, I know of Cinefa, Cinefa. But the problem is sometimes the farmers are not very, they don't know either how to use the tools or they don't have the capital to purchase the tools. So it's a complicated space where sometimes the technology is there, but the adoption is the problem. Yeah. So I don't know how we could, I think that's a policy issue and I'm not an expert in that.
If it's for me, I think that's a problem in its own self, that even I think organizations like Zone Zero and Kisumu, which again, this will be talked about in another episode, can really help tap, because then we have huge opportunities in Africa, but very poor usage of the internet and digitalization. Maybe moving on, now that we've talked about industries that have very great potential in AI or have been showing great potential in AI, what about these fields that have somewhat been untapped in Africa?
Fields that have been untapped in Africa. Recently, I think it was last year, the ChatGPT, the OpenAI, they released a model that can, they released a model that can help students learn. You find a, like, you can do, you, a child can learn on their own, the voice models. A child can have the, like, the tablets and what, and they have the ChatGPT, and they can have an AI teacher. And you find such is not being implemented in our education system a lot. Though, okay, there's the question of trusting AI with everything, but also the kids, it as we have said, it's a very fast learning model, and we feel like, I feel like it's something, if introduced in our local schools, it can be very beneficial, or even like at home, the kids, when you're back at home doing homework and stuff, it can be something very beneficial to the kids. So in the education sector, mostly in the lower high school, and nowadays it's been called the new education model system. I feel like they should find a way to integrate it, mostly because of this generation and their, what can I say? It's been termed as the low attention span generation, yeah? So you need to find a more interactive way of teaching them other than the previous kind of boring model that we were learning with. So the education sector really needs a lot into that. And also like healthcare, though it's been integrated, but more and more, though I wouldn't trust a doctor to chat GPT during surgery. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. And I think in the field of software engineering, we wouldn't be where we are without open source. Yeah. So really, what opportunity does open sourcing AI bring for us, especially in terms of innovation and transparency?
Basically, it helps people like have their own models. You know, we've seen how DeepSeek took the world by storm a few months ago when China released their AI model and open sourced it, and kind of gave their budget of how they did it and trained it, and basically everyone decided now they want to work on their own models, and you find like people having your own model, you can curate it to your own needs and the stuff you want it to generate it. Basically, you're giving it your own training data, so it just makes your life kind of easier. Yeah.
What about you? Are you like a big person when it comes to open sourcing code?
Yeah. I think there's a huge opportunity in open source. For example, now we have the open source models, but I think also what's lacking is tools, open source tools, on how we can leverage the existing models to build now AI agents that can do things beyond just text generation or just searching on the on the chatbot. So, for example, you could ask it to do something and it would go on the internet and search and build a document and do all manner of stuff. So there aren't yet open source tools to help build those AI agents that we can use or leverage to solve problems that are existing. Yeah.
Okay. You've just spoken about AI agents. Could you maybe talk a little bit more on what an AI agent is? And you've talked about tools. Have you worked on tools with regards to AI as well? I'm interested in hearing that about you.
Okay, so I think most of us are aware, we've used ChatGPT, yeah. Where you go and search your prompt and it generates an answer to your prompt. So an agent is different in the sense that it can do other things beyond just generating the text. So, for example, you could ask it to do a stuff, something, and it will break it down into, break it down into steps to follow. Then it will follow the steps. So, if those steps involve, for example, searching a database, it will leave the LLM, go search something in the database, and then give you an answer. Or maybe even go search something on the search engines like Google, and come back with an answer. So agents just increase what you can do with large language models. Yeah. In terms of tools to leverage the use, I think most of us have built tools that are using the LLM APIs, but I've not yet built an agent that does other things beyond just getting a response from the LLM. So using, for example, the response from the LLM to generate a query, for example, to go in the database and search something and come back with it. Yeah.
For the tools, recently we had a hackathon with Berryjam, an AI company in Australia. So we were working on different ideas on the theme of AI. And one of the key concepts we were working on is building a decision tree with Go. And basically, from that, we got to learn a lot on how, like, AI models think. Or, again, in quotes, think. So, basically, we were just giving it data. Let's say, like, data of whether it will rain or whether it will be sunny, blah, blah, blah. And all the attributes that lead up to somebody even leaving his house, depending on the weather, depending on whether he has something to do, and you know, and that's where the decision tree part comes in. And we really learned a lot during coding these and how they think. As for agents, I'd just say, like, for a basically, as Hillary has mentioned, the large language models are mostly restricted to the browsers or the whatever application you're using. And it finds, you get to a point where you, as a software developer, for instance, you have to, like, go to the browser, then switch back to the VS Code or whatever IDE you use. And this is where the agents, like, recently I saw Anthropic, the company for Claude, they released a new agent where it does all that for you. Once you install it in your machine, it can even do commits and push code for you. All you just do is just describe whatever you want. And that's where now we are getting in software engineering, we are getting into the digital era of vibes coding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you've just talked about this hackathon that I'm hoping the both of you participated in. And I want to give you five minutes is too much. Just 2 seconds each. You can geek out. What's new, something new that you learned that you're really excited about?
Okay. So the model that we're building, the algorithm, was a form of supervised learning.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, it was a way of taking a data and building like a model where the program can make decision based on the data that you give it. Yeah. So in terms of what I'm excited for, how we can use the predictions generated by AI for example, to do other stuff. I recently saw that Google had an integration where they're using Gemini to instruct a robot, for example.
Yeah.
So you can prompt the Gemini and the robot will do whatever you've prompted in the chat. So that's also another use case for agents where you just type text and it does things beyond just generating text. Yeah. I'm very excited for the use case in robotics.
Mm-hmm. So use case in robotics, Moses?
For me, the project that we did, the decision tree, it helped me learn a lot about how the models are trained and how they get information, you know. And there was a lot of math involved, information gain and entropy and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it helped me realize like this is like the most basic thing,
yeah,
the AI does, and you have to look at this from a global scale where they get the entire data of the internet and they train it and how much processing power goes into it, how much money and all that effort goes into it, and is there more to come? Is there what's next after you've used up all the data to train it? Is just that you've reached the limit of its thinking capacity, or is there more to come? Yeah.
Is there more to come?
I'd like to add something.
Yeah, sure.
also, when we were working on the hackathon, one of the important concepts we also learned was about how you can use very specific data, mm-hmm, and then generalize it to something that the model has not yet encountered. Yeah, so I think that will be very helpful considering that going into the future, most of the data we have on the internet is already AI generated. So how can we, for example, train the models to make predictions of things it has not yet encountered if all its training data is also AI generated? Yeah. So very interesting.
Okay, so AI uses AI generated data to train itself. And okay, we get it.
The big question to the world, why are software developers trying to replace us? Why are they using the models that are going to replace themselves? And but basically, I feel like AI should be integrated more into our daily lives. It will help us get over the hurdle of what looking for a lot of information, you know, a lot of reading, a lot of stuff. And once that hurdle is over, we get opportunities to come up with bigger things and even better. And as much as it's going to reduce jobs, it's also going to create more opportunities. Yeah.
Parting shots?
I think there's this, for example, in EdTech, this idea that maybe AI is bad, it's cheating and everything like that. I think the right attitude going forward is AI is here to stay.
Yeah,
it's not going anywhere, so you might as well get with the program. Mm-hmm. So I think more people should know about AI, try and use it, and also think of how it will affect their lives. So get more into AI governance. For example, if your county government is using AI to do something, try and find out what it is specifically they're trying to use the AI for and how it will affect your life. Yeah, and advocate for yourself. So I think AI governance is very important and it should include everyone. Yeah. So people should really pay attention.
All right, there you have it. Please pay attention to AI and keep connected to the global digital world. Thank you so much for joining us today in our podcast, In The Zone podcast. We hope to see you next time. That's it from us. Bye. Sorry.